I'm so impressed with the work, the talent. I'm grateful to be here. I'm excited, nervous. I can't feel my hands right now. Give me a drink of water. All right, sisters, let's talk. Our topic is communication. Big, daunting, complicated topic. We could go many different ways. And communication is hard, hard, hard. This morning, my six-year-old came upstairs screaming. She said, "Charlie just spit on my waffle." And I heard my wife say, "Why did you spit on your waffle?" She said, "Because I threw his chocolate chip on the floor." And what do you say to that? Where do you start with that? And so often I get it wrong. Every 8 or 9 days or so, I'll look at my wife and I'll say, "I am a terrible father and a terrible person and a terrible human being." And she'll look at me and she'll have a numb stare and she'll say, "No, you're great. You're great." So, look, I'm not perfect. I'm working on this just like you are. But what I do hope to do is bring to you some of the wisdom I've harvested from my career and my training. I'm a psychiatrist. Maybe the beard gave that away. Sometimes when people ask me what kind of physician I make them guess. And the beard helps. My wife and I finished medical school in Nevada. Then we moved to Loma Linda for another 4 years of training in psychiatry. Now we're here in San Clemente. I'm in a very chaotic and eclectic private practice. It takes me all over Orange County. I see all kinds of people. People with addictions or dementia or depression or anxiety. I love what I do. I don't have an office. I'm more like a traveling psychiatrist. I go to therapy programs or hospitals or locked psychiatric wards. I see many people on the worst days of their life. Every day I speak to people who are considering suicide or who have recently attempted suicide. I see many people get better. And I see other people who refuse to get better. And sometimes I see people who can't. Well, I've learned a lot about how humans work, about how we work. The knowledge has been precious to me. I've chosen 3 topics to bring up to you today. I hope that these topics will serve as reminders for certain realities. And that remembering them will naturally change the way we talk with others. They're simple. These concepts are simple. They're familiar. You may have heard them before. I pray that they may in some way bless you. So, sisters, let's talk about unconditional positive regard, the principles of boundaries, and then we'll talk about temperament. The first topic is unconditional positive regard. It's a phrase coined by a wonderful therapist named Carl Rogers from the 60s. Think of those words, unconditional positive regard. If I have unconditional positive regard for you, that would mean that I would have positive feelings for you no matter what. There would be nothing that you could do that would make you seem unworthy or unlovable to me. It feels so good to be with somebody who has unconditional positive regard for you. It's unmistakable. We all have in the back of our brains, our more primitive brains, radars that can detect very quickly whether or not people care. And really, humans need it. Without unconditional positive regard, we tend to be like plants without water. Think of the opposite. Think of conditional positive regard. This is the expression that you are worthwhile only if. Or that I will only think well of you if this or that. People who treat you conditionally are not safe people. You don't have a sense that they'll be there for you reliably. What's more, we've had study after study try to determine what is effective in psychotherapy. Psychotherapy really does have a power to heal a troubled heart. And there are many, many different types of psychotherapy. Some are very free-flowing, some are very manualized, Some have basic principles. Turns out, though, it doesn't really matter what is said between you and a therapist, or between you and a trusted friend, or between you and your spouse. Because if there's a backdrop of unconditional positive regard, then just being with you will be therapeutic. Because you are a safe person in a tough world. I often share this when I'm training therapists or when I'm talking to people about finding their own therapist. If you're a therapist, don't get hung up on what you're going to say or on the perfect phrase or theory. Just be there with your client. And if you're looking for a therapist, don't worry about finding the perfect therapist. If it's a safe place, then run with it. This starts really young in our lives. Picture a baby being soothed just because mom's there. That is beyond words. I experienced something like that firsthand when I was a resident at Loma Linda, and we were encouraged as part of our training to get our own psychotherapy. I was actually very grateful for the excuse, because I've been craving, you know, some type of professional therapeutic experience for a while, but you don't quite know how to get it going or who to ask. And asking for help is awkward, you know. But I started seeing therapists every week. I can't tell you how valuable it was, but I also can't really tell you what went on. I'll come home after one of our meetings feeling a little lighter, feeling a little less at odds with myself and my life, you know, a little more comfortable in my own skin. And my wife would say, how'd it go? And I'd say, great. And she very respectfully and tactfully, what'd you talk about? You know? And I'd have to think about it, and I honestly couldn't really answer. There was nothing hokey. I remember there was nothing bizarre or strange or new age. It was very simple, actually. We'd sit together and talk about my life in a very non-judgmental, open way, with non-judgmental curiosity. By so doing, that became a safe place. I could be honest with myself, real with myself, and the world could stop turning for a second, and I could think a little straighter. And so let's ask ourselves in here, do you have enough safe people in your life? Are you a safe person for others? Do we speak to our children, our spouses, our friends, and do you speak to yourself with unconditional positive regard? Or do we think well of others only if this or that? Or do we think well of ourselves only if? I was talking to a woman last week at one of my programs. In her 40s, she said to me, I hate myself. She said, I've not done any of the things I wanted to do with my life. And I asked her if she thought that she had to do certain things to be lovable. She thought, yes, I thought we are judged by what we do. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. I had to have a conversation that, because if we were judged by what we did, then we're all toast. Because nobody's perfect. And no one would therefore be lovable. So for her, like a newsflash, that your inherent worth is unconditional. And that there's nothing you can do or not do that calls into question your essential worthwhileness. Now, we're not always going to feel this all day. We're not going to feel that we were with people who are safe, or that we were safe with safe people. That's okay. That's life, really. But maybe we can use the language we talk about in here to help us recognize and put words around why we're feeling lonely or discouraged, or, you know, I was a little too hard on somebody else, or, you know, somebody's being a little hard on you. It's a good topic. Unconditional positive regard, but it begs a few questions. Brings us to our next topic. That's the principle of boundaries. Just because you love someone unconditionally doesn't mean that we have to tolerate everything that they do. What are you supposed to do when you're mistreated, or when you feel pulled to act or be in a certain way? Or when you're asked to do something you don't agree with? Or when you do something you're not proud of? You can love someone, love yourself, but when are we enabling? So we use the language of boundaries. This is the language of respecting others and respecting yourself. Setting boundaries involves looking deep into yourself, what you feel, what you think, and then clearly expressing that to somebody else. You do this and your relationships change, you define yourself. Without clear boundaries, you forget who you are, get muddled in how you feel, the terms of your relationships become vague. It's like a gate, you let the good things in, and you keep bad things out. And you control this gate. And you do not control anyone else's gate. It's terribly important. Trying to control other people is not only disrespectful and hurtful, it's also futile. We don't control others. All we can really do is express love, unconditional positive regard, and at the same time protect ourselves with boundaries. And let other people protect themselves their own way with their own boundaries. Here are some telltale signs. They may need some work. Protecting yourself with boundaries or respecting other people's boundaries. Here's some, ready? You're feeling like you never have time for yourself. That everyone else's priorities are taking control of yours, your life. You're giving solutions to somebody else who hasn't asked for them. You're preaching about what other people should and shouldn't do. You're scared to say what you want. You're napping. You're mind reading. Or you're sending out guilt trips. Or you're protecting other people from their own consequences. Or you feel steamrolled after a conversation. So let's do some examples of setting boundaries. There's one for kids. I would love to play with you, but mommy's tired. Mommy's going to take 20 minutes on that beautiful looking couch. And when I'm done, we can play. A new boundary in our house is my wife and I found ourselves nagging our little six-year-old to pick up her clothes. She loves clothes. She gets dressed up 30, 40 times a day. And she leaves clothes everywhere. So instead of nagging her to pick up her clothes, we've told her. When we find her clothes, we're going to pick them up and put them on the shelf. We call the shelf Mount Everest. And if she wants to get those clothes, she has to do something like sing a song or something for us. Do a little performance. And then she does it. Get the dress down. She wants to get back. More serious note, here's another example of a boundary. Son, I love you so much, but coming home drunk means I take away your car keys. Setting boundaries with addicts is near impossible without support. There's Alcoholics Anonymous for somebody with alcohol addiction. But there's something called Al-Anon for the loved ones of persons with addictions. So if you need support, it's there. Now for boundaries with our spouses. And here's one. It's thematic, a little thematic. Honey, this is my wife talking. Honey, every time you drive fast, I get scared. That's her expressing. Laying a boundary. I don't like that. You may have to reinforce with the boundary. Honey, every time you go over the speed limit, I'm going to turn on opera music full blast. Or here's some other boundaries. A way to say, role modeling them can be useful to stick in your head. I'd like to help you, Dad, but I'm not sure how. Can you tell me? I appreciate you trying to help me in this matter, sweetie. And you may be right, but I've got to figure this out for myself. Here's one from this morning. My wife this morning made me pinky swear. She grabbed my hand and made me pinky swear that I wasn't going to make her stand up or wave at her and maybe call her out. And I'm not going to do that to you today, sweetie. Or so simple statements. Put some simple statements in your head. I don't like it when. I don't like it when you throw my chocolate chip on the floor. Or I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. Or I'd rather talk about something else. Or simply no. Boundaries are tough. Laying them is hard. Reinforcing them is harder. And communicating love while drawing boundaries, like walking tightrope sometimes, but they're essential. They're not selfish. In fact, they're clarifying for all involved, and we can all use a little more clarity. There's a series of books by a man named Dr. Cloud, who wrote a book, Boundaries, Boundaries for Marriage, Boundaries for Kids, a wonderful series of books. So we've touched on two of our three. Unconditional positive regard and boundaries. The last one is the topic of temperament. And it explores why we humans are so frustrating. Have you ever thought to yourself that if everyone's just a little bit more like you, the world would make so much sense? Or, I love my husband, but he's crazy. He does not get it. He's not getting it. Or, I love my sister, but she is from outer space. So this is the concept of temperament comes in here. Everyone on earth has a particular temperament. It's a style of being. Some people are right-handed, some people are left-handed. Some people are extroverts, some are introverts. Some are high energy, some are low energy. Some have their heads on the ground, some have their heads in the clouds. And these traits don't change, sisters. Lefties will always be lefties, and extroverts always extroverts. We know this largely from studying twins separated at birth. Psychologists love it when twins are separated at birth. They love it. Temperament is in our DNA. It's in our wiring. Actually, grouping people by their temperament is ancient stuff. Plato, Galen, Hippocrates, Aristotle, they all had their own groupings. And they're actually quite consistent over the centuries, the way they group people. And knowing your grouping is a fun, non-threatening way to explore who you are and who other people are. It doesn't explain all of who we are. We're more complicated than just our group. But these underlying motivations and these underlying styles are rather fixed. They're stuck with you. Today we have in our culture, the same sort of grouping going on, but in a different form. We have the Myers-Briggs personality typology. We have the color code. We have the ocean testing, which is more formal psychology stuff. And then there's that masterpiece of literature. I'm not kidding. The five love languages, just memorize them. Now, raise your hand if you've done the color code. Okay. Raise your hand if you're a blue. Okay, blues. Raise your hand if you're white. The whites. Then there's the Myers-Briggs. You know, the letters. Raise your hand if you've had experience with Myers-Briggs typology. Raise your hand if you're an extrovert. Raise your hand if you're an introvert. Okay. So yes. According to Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENFP. My wife is an ISFJ. Those just sound so different, don't they? ENFP, ISFJ, and they are. And this is made for some serious comedy over the last 12 years. So ISFJ, let's do my wife. I'm not going to have you stand up here. ISFJ is grounded, practical, reasonable, head on the ground, dutiful, reliable. Their intelligence is the intelligence of the logistician, making sure everybody has their boots. You know, when they go out in the rain or they're brushing their teeth or there's food in the house. I'm an ENFP, head in the clouds. Ideas, not ground, space. You know? Feelings, existential crises, problem-solving, decision-making. You know, ENFP, ISFJ, it's a little bit like I'm speaking Greek and she's speaking Japanese. So take something as simple as a Saturday morning. Meg's up early. She's ready to go. She has a list of things she wants to get done. There's work to do. Special boost from getting things done. I, on the other hand, I'm desperate to relax. Contemplate the universe. Let's take a breather on that beautiful couch because we're all going to die. Right, look, stop sweeping. stop sweeping. Sit next to me. So what we do, obviously, is we have to compromise. We have some give and take. She lets me sleep in on a Saturday. I help her with her list. It becomes a fair negotiation between the Greeks and the Japanese. There are some negotiations, there's some tidying up. Well, this language has infiltrated our everyday. Can't quite turn it off. On Monday, she woke up. I opened my eyes. She tells me, let's paint the downstairs room, let's paint it. And I begged her, don't paint it. It's just going to be an all-day thing. But in my mind, I thought, there's my Eliza J being her Eliza J song. The real power of temperament studies comes from what I think is that it saves us from what one author called the Pygmalion Project. Pygmalion is a character from Greek mythology who carved himself a beautiful woman out of stone, and he fell in love with her. What the author suggests, his name is David Kearsey, wonderful book. The book is called Please Understand Me. That's the name of the book, Please Understand Me, great title. What he's saying is, when we become parents or spouses, or with whoever, siblings or whoever, we start chipping away at people. We're trying to make them more like us. We're not doing this because we're evil or devious or selfish, really. We're doing this because, I think, we all naturally tend to organize the world into things that are more familiar, less threatening. And like I said, I think the temperament studies, knowing who you are, knowing who your spouse is, will remind you that that's just doomed to fail, the Pygmalion Project. Traits are not good or bad, they just are. And they are real factors in the way that we live and love. You may have noticed that your children or siblings or your parents come pre-packaged from heaven. I have three sisters. I have a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead. That sounds like the introduction to a joke. I have two brothers of an entrepreneur, cop, psychiatrist. That sounds like an introduction to a joke. But no, that's my family. And there's been drama in my family, like every family, because of misreading each other or having unfair expectations of each other. But if we can accept ourselves, warts and all, something like unconditional positive regard feels less forced. Instead of being frustrated with somebody else, we become fascinated. We can start to appreciate their strengths, appreciate that they can do things that we don't want to do or can't do. My wife, I'm so grateful to my wife, because I would rather eat glass than brush my child's teeth. My wife is on a mission every night to make sure those kids' teeth are sparkling. The last thing, this is true, the last thing she said to me before we parted ways this morning, before I came here, was, make sure you brush your teeth. Thank you, Nick. I did. And if we accept ourselves, warts and all, and accept others, warts and all, boundaries become easier to draw. It's less like you're gearing up for a fight, and less like you're standing up for yourself, and more like you're negotiating. Because different people naturally want different things a different way. That's okay. So no more fighting, instead we're clarifying. I could go on philosophizing, remember EFP, but my wife suggested, I suggested, that I should stop meandering for a bit and read a quote or something. So I have a quote. She did this last night. I was going to the session. She says, you need a quote. So I'm going to do a quote. This is a quote by Gordon Aitken. I try to recognize my wife's individuality, her personality, her desires, her background, her ambitions. Let her fly. Yes, let her fly. Let her develop her own talents. Let her do things her way. Get out of her way and marvel at what she does. There's one for children by a man named Khalil Gibran. He wrote a book called The Prophet. And the prophet, it's just a gorgeous poem. Go home and read the prophet. What Gibran says is that he likens children to arrows. And we as parents are not the archers. We are the bows. And God is the archer. Your job as a parent is to be sure and steady. God will determine where that arrow goes, not you. So, let's get to know each other. Let's get to know ourselves. Your spouses, your children, your friends. Go online, take the test, have fun with these labels and have fun with these games. Maybe your communication can change. There are many, many, many different topics I could have talked about today. I was quite intimidated by what I was not going to talk with you about today. Here are some honorable mentions. I'm going to talk about things I didn't talk about. NFPs do that. Now, all inclusive. We could have spent some serious time talking about shame. How shame informs the way that you see yourself and talk to people. There's a woman by the name of Brené Brown. Her book should be required reading in school. We could have talked about comparison. How we tend to harshly compare ourselves to others or compare our spouses to other spouses or our children to other children. I also consider talking about cognitive distortions or thought traps. You could go home and Google thought distortions. You'll see a list of thought traps and habits that we all get caught with. And by doing that, you can start put that language around what goes on inside of your head. Maybe start catching yourself labeling. We catch yourself thinking in all or nothing terms. Or you can catch yourself fortune telling. Then we could have spent a long time talking about the Serenity Prayer, one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written. Serenity Prayer is, God grant to me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom to know the difference. That sentiment and prayer is woven into your everyday, then you're talked different to others. I think I chose the three I did above, unconditional positive regard, boundaries, and temperance studies, perhaps because they've been such guideposts in my life. Another take-home point. I've learned that anything effective in psychiatry has at its core a gospel truth or a gospel principle. Doesn't unconditional positive regard sound like the love that Heavenly Father has for you? Doesn't it recall the way Christ looked at that woman who was being hounded by the mob when he said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone"? There was nothing that woman could have done that would have made him turn away. Adult boundaries just sound like a modern twist on the doctrine of free agency. We respect the agency of others. And we know that we are the agents of our own lives. Temperamental studies talk about temperament. And that makes me think of our eternal spirits, our eternal uniqueness, and our eternal potential. You know, the gospel of Jesus Christ is the prime mover of everything, of what is good, what is lovely, anything that brings harmony or peace. And as we do our best to live the gospel, these principles help us slowly unfold into something greater, more beautiful, less afraid, more flexible, but also more sure. We'll begin to love others with less question. We respect others and empower them to fulfill their agency. And we glory in seeing ourselves grow to meet unique potential. Slowly, 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 we become more like our heavenly parents. But remember, we must be patient. Life is very hard, and life is not getting any easier for anybody. You can do everything right and still find yourself confused, demoralized, grieving, or lonely. Life does not always turn out the way you want it to. I had a call from an old friend, a woman in her 40s. LDS, good girl. She followed the formula. She said her prayers, read her scriptures, went to church. And still, nothing she could do to prevent the suffering that comes from having an alcoholic husband, or from her financial difficulties, or from feeling distant from her kids, or helpless. She thought something was wrong with her, or said that something was wrong with something she was doing, or something was wrong with the gospel, because it wasn't working. And if she was doing it right, wasn't she supposed to be happy? Weren't things supposed to work out? The answer is no. We're here for a specific purpose. The gospel teaches this, and psychiatry doesn't. We're here to grow, and we're here to learn, and that, by definition, is going to be very uncomfortable. While we're not going to feel happy all the time, and while we're not going to get what we want all the time, or even what is right or fair all the time, an eternal perspective allows you to feel joy and peace in the process. Joy in lessons learned. Joy in each other, because we're all in the same boat. And that eternal perspective is so easily forgotten. That's why I think we're sitting here in this building, why we have these workshops, why we give you books to read, why we check in with each other, why we get therapists. It's why we return here to church every Sunday, because we forget. We're doing our best to always remember, and then to remind ourselves after we've forgotten, because we will. So, we've taken a little time to talk. I hope that this type of talk, this type of gathering, which is so precious, will help remind you that you are eternally worthwhile, that you have power in your agency. May you love yourself as God loves you. May you love others as God loves them. May you enjoy the difficult and mysterious process of spiritual growth. I pray that these truths, these ideas, these philosophies and concepts will serve as guideposts to you on your journey. I testify they have mine. And I pray that we will all communicate with each other.